Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, the Islanders finally won their first game. Was not a smooth one, and there's a lot to be concerned about after three games. But I feel like if we had done this podcast either Sunday night or Monday, we would be in a much different mood than we are in now. That getting that one win off our backs really is very helpful. But I think once we start to break it down, we'll get the anxiety ramped back up again pretty quickly.
Yeah, I was that same thought crossed my mind, and it even crossed my mind. I was like, thank God we're not doing the podcast during the first period yesterday, right? Too. You know, it's just there was definitely a lot to be anxious about, and the cruel part of what happened was the fact that there were 2 days between the loss on Saturday and the win on Tuesday, which really kind of screwed with my head a little bit, because if you think back to last season and the playoffs and I guess even the bubble, it was basically you were playing either every other day or 3 and 4, and there was very rarely a break in the schedule for even 2 days like there was on Sunday and Monday. So that was really tough to deal with. And the worst part about it is that I was looking for some pity or something from other fan bases, and I couldn't get it because everyone was like, oh, they'll be fine. It's just two games. And
yeah.
I was like, no, you have no idea. It's season's over. This is a disaster. we should have all known this was going to happen. And all my friends, either if they're Ranger fans, I have some friends who are Canadiens fans and just other fan bases. They were all like, you just are pissing us off. We got bigger fish to fry than an 0-2 start for a Stanley Cup contender. And you're over there, you know, woe is me-ing about a loss to two very good teams. So yeah. I was like, well, you didn't even watch the game. You didn't see how slow the defense looked and how, you know, is Sorokin okay? I don't know. And no pity. So the pity party was just me, you, and the rest of the Islander fans kind of in our own little bubble, I guess.
One thing I've come to learn so far in this first week of the NHL season, I don't know if we'll get to talk about this later, but it did cross my mind, and it's probably something we should address either in this episode or in a later episode. But like, it's occurred to me that the Islanders have become respected, which is what we had hoped for, but they're not exactly liked amongst other people. Like, you know, it's one thing to like pick them to be a Stanley Cup contender or perhaps, you know, go far in the playoffs or something like that, but it's different than being like liked, you know what I'm saying? So like the Devils all of a sudden are everybody's favorite team. Like everybody loves the Devils. They got Jack Hughes. They're fun. That, you know, he smiles and he's got his brother there. And like, so all of a sudden the Devils are liked, and it's like, I remember when the Devils were winning Stanley Cups and nobody could stand these guys, you know, and I respected them and I enjoyed watching them in the playoffs because the Islanders, of course, never made the playoffs. But like, it seemed like they were more respected than liked, and the Islanders have kind of like occupied that space now where they're, people are picking them to go far. And like you said, like nobody sweats an 0-2 start for that team because, you know, they'll be fine. Why not? They're a Barry Trotz team. They got talent. They're expected to win the cup or be at least challenge the cup. Who cares about 0-2 start? But it's not like people were kind of rooting for them to pull themselves out of this funk, you know? Meanwhile, with the Sabres, it's like, oh man, they're 3-0. That's awesome. Like, that's great, you know? And it's like, it is? Really? Weren't we just like dogging this team for years and years because they just, you know, wouldn't let Jack Eichel get his surgery? I don't know. It's just kind of funny to me.
Yeah, that was actually the thought I had when the Islanders, that review happened last night. Which we'll get to later.
Yeah.
But just the review, I was like, oh God, everyone's going to be like, oh, here are the Islanders being annoying. And again, like how this is the most unlikable team. and it also, you know, with the groundbreaking, culture defining, progressive, relaxed dress codes around the league, of course, you know,
yeah, that's got something to do with it too.
Yeah. Sure. It's changing, going to change everything. And, you know, but before you know, this becomes a whole thing, because I think it will when the Islanders don't relax their dress code. I think it's always important, and I always think about this too in just in life, is you, when stuff like this is when you can tell something like this is going to bubble up or it's going to be an issue, just always know to have something, you know, in the holster ready for it, which for me is, yeah, this, it's not when the Islanders are the only team that still requires their players to wear suit and ties. You can remind everybody who makes fun of Lou and calls him draconian and calls the team, you know, too old school or whatever, that the Islanders just signed two defensemen who could go to the market and make $9 million elsewhere for $3 million under what like their fair market value is. And they chose to be here. Everybody on this core didn't leave. They are choosing to stay here and be here in this draconian environment. You know, like it's like they're locked in a castle in Transylvania or something by Dracula or something. And it's not the case. These are players who really want to be here. Zdeno Chara, who came here, Zach Parise came here. And so it's just get ready for that. And that's all I'm trying to say. And that's what I would tell anybody who obviously cardinal rule is number one is when these people do pop up on Twitter about that stuff, never tweet, you know, that's always the cardinal rule. And, but if you do happen to break the cardinal rule of don't ever tweet, that's what I would say to these people. Like, look at the players who have chosen to stay here for good deals. Ryan Pulock could have got $8 or $9 million compared to when you look around the defense market, and he stayed here on this team, which is not going to relax its dress code. I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's no, that's definitely coming. The Athletic, we'll talk a lot about the Athletic in a little bit. They have a style reporter. Well, somebody on the style beat now because of these relaxed dress codes. And let's just say I wouldn't expect to see any Islanders on those write-ups anytime soon. But we're getting way too far ahead of ourselves. Let's start with the actual game. So the season started in Carolina, in Raleigh, last week. It was a 6-3 loss for the Islanders. Probably the all-time worst place for the Islanders to start a season would have been Carolina. I told a friend of mine that. He was like, what'd you think of the game? I'm like, they couldn't have started in a worse possible place than Carolina. A good team, a place that's never been, really an easy ride for the Islanders at all. The 6-3 is maybe a little bit misleading because one of them was an empty net, but the Islanders didn't play well in that game. They started with the first goal of the game. Barzal got it after a review. It was kind of a weird thing. Andrei Svechnikov scored a couple minutes later. They were noticeably slower and more passive than the Hurricanes were. The Hurricanes are generally a pretty aggressive, fast team anyway, but the Islanders were really slow and really passive. Brock Nelson scored. Jordan Martinook scored. Niederreiter went literally around Chara to score a goal, and that was pretty much where the wheels came off. Sorokin didn't play all that well. Anders Lee did score an Anders Lee-type goal, which was pretty nice. But then in the third period, the Islanders just didn't have a chance. Teravainen scores in a power play. Svechnikov hits the empty netter. Barzal took kind of an ill-advised penalty at the end. The forwards were okay. Lee, Barzal, Palmieri was pretty good. Sorokin, though, not really his best game. Not terrible, but not really great either. But Green, Chara, in particular, were very, very slow. They spent a lot of time in their own zone. They went 0-3 on the power play, which isn't something new for the Islanders. So it was not a great start. What did you think after watching that one? It was not good, but I thought there were some things that were okay. But generally speaking, it was not the best start for the Islanders in a season in which they're expected to do big things.
Yeah, it was the ultimate game where you had to wait to see, unfortunately, had to wait for the next game to come to see if how bad it was, like, because there were some good things. There were some good signs that the first line was buzzing. I thought that the third line was in its first game together. Looked like it made sense. Because it took a little bit for Wallstrom to get going in this 3-game stint, and boy, did he! But you could tell, like, oh wow, this is gonna work as a trio, right? Like, Pageau is a super like hyper smart hockey player. Knows exactly where to be, when to pressure, when to go back and cover for maybe a pinching defenseman or if a forward's out of place. Parise, one thing I guess I didn't give him enough credit for as a forward before coming to the Islanders, or I never noticed about his game, was just how much gravity he has. He takes defensemen with him all over the ice because he skates real hard, real fast after pucks. He digs them out. Wherever the puck is, he's around it. And what that does is it creates a lot of open space if they're on the forecheck, and who better to occupy that open space than the guy with the best shot on the team, Oliver Wallstrom. So you started to see signs of that in that first game. I thought Sorokin had such a weird first two games because he was making a lot of really tough saves. But he was just not dealing with whether it be rebound control. He wasn't dealing with like the secondary part of goaltending, battling through traffic and rebound control. I wasn't too worried about it coming out of that Carolina game. And same goes with Chara and Green. I was like, you know, it's game one. Zdeno Chara is such a unicorn. He's not only is it going to take time for him to get used to playing the Islanders style of hockey, but it's also going to take a lot of time for the Islanders to get used to playing with a 6'9" defenseman who's got a wingspan like a condor. Like it's going to take a little bit of time for the rest of the team to kind of just figure that out. Like what having that skill set as a teammate does, especially in the defensive zone. And it definitely did. Him and Green, I think coming out of that game, I went into the Florida game thinking, all right, I want to see, you know, a little bit steadier performance from Sorokin. I'd like to see Green and Chara not be as concerning as they were. And that was really it. Like, the fourth line was completely invisible in the first game, I thought, but that was
Matt Martin wasn't there.
Yeah. It's just such a cliche, but it is so true. Yeah. It really warms my heart that when for years now, people would make fun of the Islanders, you know, 4 or 5 years ago about giving Martin, Cizikas, and Clutterbuck these deals. And then they're like, well, someone would say, well, they don't work without each other. And then they get poo-pooed by whoever, like, come on, they're hockey players. They, you know, they're fourth liners. You can put anyone on that line, but it's so otherworldly that these three just are so much better with each other that you see just the game you saw in the first game with that fourth line just being completely with Ross Johnson, who you think would be like a like for like switch with Matt Martin, but he's not. He's not as good. I think Ross actually might have more offensive upside than Matt Martin when the puck is actually on a stick, but he just is not as good a forechecker. He's just not he just doesn't have the presence under the faceoff dots that Martin does. And then with Leo, who I thought was all right in the next game, it was the same thing though. That fourth line just didn't get going yet. So I was looking for that and then that second game, like all the things that I was hoping that even if they lost, it was like if these problems kind of progress, these problem areas get better, I'll feel a little bit better, but they didn't. They all ended up getting worse.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing with both Johnston and Leo, they're obviously very different players and neither of them is Matt Martin, but like they just don't have that sort of mind reading capability that Martin has to know like where Clutterbuck and Cizikas are going to be. And I think the three of them have these tells that they may or may not subconsciously know from each other where they just know, like they just know where each other's going to be. It's like the way, you know what room somebody's in when you're in the house together, when you're all living together, because you can just sense them there, you know? And I think that that's the thing that they don't have. I was thinking about this. We'll get to the Chicago game, obviously, in a few minutes. But like, I was thinking that it is going to get to a point where like these guys aren't going to play together. And like, unless they all retire in the same year, something is going to get weird. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's going to get to a point where, I mean, Martin has 3 more years, so 2 more after this one and then 2 more. Clutterbuck is a UFA at the end of this year, but you know he's going to resign. I mean, who knows? He'll probably get something. And then Cizikas is here for 6 years, right? So like, at some point, they're either going to retire at the end of, you know, Martin or whoever's contract, or they're going to have to bring somebody in and learn how he plays too. So it is kind of an interesting dynamic that we'll have to see play out eventually. But yeah, the game in Florida was a little bit better. The Islanders had a pretty good first period. They started out with a lot of pressure. The Panthers put on a lot of pressure. It is important, and we'll talk, you know, at the end of this one, like, playing the Hurricanes and Panthers right off the bat was very, very difficult. Like, these are two really, really good teams. In fact, two teams that, you know, if the Islanders are picked to win the division or the Islanders are picked to go to the Stanley Cup final, guess what? These two teams are also in that mix. The Hurricanes were picked to win the division by a lot of people, and the Panthers are, you know, a sort of a dark horse pick to go to the Cup final too. Sam Bennett scored, you know, in the first period. The period ended about even. Bennett scored again in the second on a wraparound. Again, you know, Sorokin maybe didn't look quite as comfortable. Looked like Ryan Pulick got the Islanders on the board, but the goal was taken off the board from interference. I don't know, whatever. Again, they played pretty well. They had a good power play. But Anthony Duclair scored late in the period after like a long kind of home run pass. And that was pretty much the end of the game. You know, Oliver Wahlstrom scored early in the third on a power play. It's a really nice goal. But then Bennett completed the hat trick. Right over Sorokin's glove was not good. And then Barkov again, much like Niederreiter two nights before, went around Chara to score a goal. And that was about it. They were, again, very passive, a little bit better, but still not that aggressive. They allowed a lot of breakouts very easily. They were very, maybe too patient, is what I wrote in my notes here. So kind of better around the edges, but still not good enough. And against a good team like the Panthers, you're going to lose. They end up losing 5-1. You know, maybe they played a little bit better than that score, but they earned it. And the Duclair goal, really, that was the backbreaker. Like, that was just, you know, and it foreshadows what we'll talk about in a second with Chicago. But, it's tough. It's tough when your team is losing good games to good teams that are you could potentially play in the playoffs right off the bat. Again, not a great way to start a season, you know, of big things.
They were both uncharacteristic, too, which I think is why a lot of Islander fans were rolling into the panic room. Like, they were, they weren't, if the Islanders had lost a couple, you know, were unlucky. And I think they were a little bit against the Panthers, not to be up a goal or two early. Like, Sergei Bobrovsky was really good, like really good in that first period, which, you know, if he's the guy that is been, he's been much maligned since signing in Florida. So I thought the Islanders had a pretty good chance to win that game if he was off form, and he wasn't. And he kind of did what to us what Sorokin did to the Blackhawks on Tuesday night, which was you just need your goalie to, in a game like that, just to weather a storm, keep you in it. And as Barry Trotz loves to say, when they get to their game or they find their game, if it's a one goal deficit, like, the Islanders will be happy to be in those spots with 40 minutes to go by the time they find their game. And they just never really did against the Panthers. Like, they had it going, and it was the Panthers who ended up finding their game, like in a flip script flipper. And it was frustrating. But once again, like, there were still some positives out of it. Like you said, like, I think in that game, the third line again looked pretty good. Wahlstrom scoring was great. And Trotz, really, I was worried that Wahlstrom was about to be sat on the the Pine Pony, because he was really not off to the races at all in the opener. But he was probably their best forward, I would think. You know, going back a little bit now, already feels like that game was 2 weeks ago, but I think he probably was the best forward in that game for them. Pageau was, I remember Pageau being that line just being effective. And so, like, it was almost like that game, I was like, all right, I'm taking the same positives from it, but I'm also taking the same negatives, which you said, like, Chara and Green looked a little sleepy. And I think, like I was saying earlier, like, if the Islanders are able to adapt to Zdeno Chara and he's able to adapt, which is not a guarantee at all, and through the first three games, you'd say it's pretty far from it. I think he's actually going to be a pretty big weapon for this team, because he is he's always been a great penalty killer, obviously, and he's with his immense size and ability to win battles and get the puck to safety. Not too dissimilar from what Green is good at, actually, which is maybe part of the problem, right? Like, they both are not quick. They're both past their salad days for sure. But they're both, if you wouldn't bet against them if there's a puck that's right in front of a goalie who's on the ground and you need that puck to be ushered to safety before, like, the third forward in is crashing in to put it in the roof. Like, you would usually bet on Chara and Green to win those battles, and they did it in the first two games. Thought they both were better in the win, but I think it's just it's that's what was keeping me up at night too. Is like, they, you know, if the Chara move didn't work, the fact that they were carrying both those players was going to be a problem, and it's a fixable one. Like, it's very much a fixable one, but you have to imagine with this coaching staff and the way that they have a very long leash with like a certain player, as soon as you pass like a threshold of games, apparently you're exempt from getting benched for making mistakes and poor play. And that's what I was joking about with Wallstrom when he, you know, when he was struggling in the first game. I was like wondering, I was like, Trotz is probably just being like, couldn't you have already played like 200 games so I can stop getting mad at you with that? Like, just be a veteran already. But but they were, I think the point I'm making about Char and Green is like, they are very fixable problems. And I think the upside with Chara especially is just worth having around. So many people, and I totally understand, like, you know, it's sports. You're going to react to what you just saw. Like, so many people were like, we got to get rid of him already. Like, he's too slow or whatever, which is, you know, two games in, it's a little tough. But you got to just understand that you have a unique player, a player that nobody else has. Nobody has a 6'9" defenseman that plays as well as him. Like, yeah, the Canucks have Tyler Myers, but he's not that good. But it's like you gotta at least give it a shot. You gotta give it a fair shake, because if you do find the right mix with him, like I said, it turns into a weapon for the team. But the game against Florida, it sunk him a little bit. I think he was on for 4 or 5. And Green looked like I said, looked bad. And you have 2/3 of your left side of the defense not up to speed. It's not good. I was hoping for a steady game out of Sorokin, but same exact problem. He was making some great saves, but he was losing he was losing rebounds. He was getting beat on, you know, the, like that wraparound and some like
high glove. Yeah, with the high glove.
Yeah, the high glove. Yeah, exactly. And like he was losing the kind of the scrambles in front of him. But so, of course, then we have more than 48 hours to stew over that. It was what, 73 hours basically to stew over that game. And luckily, things got sorted a little bit in Chicago.
Yeah. So, you know, they, after all that, you know, again, a little bit of good, mostly bad. They go to Chicago and Tuesday. Yeah. That, I don't know why. Did we ever figure out why that Saturday game was a 6 o'clock start? I don't know if they really ever explained it. That's kind of just a random thing to do, especially the second game of the season. But they roll into Chicago. It was the Blackhawks home opener. The Blackhawks now, so here the Islanders 0-2. The Blackhawks are 0-3. And if we thought the Islanders were playing poorly, the Blackhawks were getting destroyed. I mean, they got beat pretty hard in Jersey. They took it on the chin in Colorado. They got beat to hell by the Penguins and Flurries, you know, one of his big return games. So they needed a win badly. It's their home opener. They were honoring the late Tony Esposito. The Islanders had played pretty poorly to start. And then it's announced they come out for warmups and Kiefer Bellows is on the top line and Anders Lee isn't there. And it's like, what is happening? Turns out he was sick. Even Barry Trotz said must have been something he ate. Whatever Chicago area restaurant that was, they should be shut down immediately. Get the mayor, the governor, the National Guard involved, whatever, have this investigated. It's the Islanders captain we're talking about here. We can't have these types of things. And, you know, if it was Nathan MacKinnon, that something would have happened. But because it's Anders Lee, nothing happens. But in any event, if it was Sidney Crosby that got sick before a game against the Blackhawks, you damn well know they would have shut down every restaurant in the city. But, you know, Anders Lee doesn't get that luxury. But in any event, so the game starts and the Islanders are absolutely flat out terrible. They are passive. They stink. They can't get the puck back. These are the Blackhawks here. Yes, they have some good players. Jonathan Toews now is back. They got Seth Jones back there now. They cannot get a shot on net. I think shots were like 12-3 at one point. They ended up being 18-8, which almost sounds better than it was, but it was hard to watch. It was bad. The one guy on the ice who was really, really good was Ilya Sorokin, who came to play. He was on top of things. He was making crazy saves. He was all over it. He was the only reason that game was tied at zeros after the first period. They came out for the second, and Anthony Beauvillier scores early. He got the unassisted goal, but really Oliver Wahlstrom did a lot of the work behind the net. He was just keeping it from Erik Gustafsson. You may remember him from Islanders training camp a couple of weeks ago, and basically did a lot of the work. And then Bo was there to hammer it home on the side. And from the middle of the period on, the tide started to kind of shift and it started to even out a little bit. The Islanders were spending a little bit less time in their zone, a little bit more time in the Blackhawks zone. Just before the end of the period, Alex DeBrincat gets a breakaway, obviously one of the more dangerous guys on the Blackhawks, and Sorokin stones him again. And it was a beautiful sight to see. I actually closed my eyes and looked at the sky like, oh, here we go. But that save was huge. And Barry Trotz even alluded to it later on that was the game changer right there. Third period, the wheels came off, not for the Islanders, for the Blackhawks. Started by killing off a penalty. Walsham scored in a turnover from the slot. Fleury would be out of position, and Walsham would score again a few minutes later. Cal Clutterbuck took advantage of Riley Stillman falling down at center ice, wires one over Fleury's glove. It was gorgeous. It was fantastic. A couple of Blackhawks had some chances, but you know, by the time Clutterbuck scores that goal, I mean, the Islanders are back to Islander mode now. They're not letting up too much off the mat. Mackenzie Entwistle, Blackhawks rookie, don't know if he's related to who bases John Entwistle, scored with about 30 seconds to go. It was challenged for offsides. They let the goal stand. Barry Trotz basically said they wanted Sorokin to get the shutout because he earned it. He made 39 saves. Some of them were absolutely spectacular. He was in the splits. He was flashing the glove, all those cliches, and he was fantastic. And the Islanders eventually did end up finding their game late. The goals helped. They were, you know, aggressive. The line of Pageau, Parisi, and Wahlstrom was by far the Islanders' best of the night. The first line with Bellows didn't really do much. You know, Palmieri was kind of active. Barzal was doing his thing, but Barzal had a lot of turnovers. It was not a great game for him. But they did start to look a little bit more like the Islanders. And so they walked out with a 4-1 win. The Blackhawks in their own four. You know, maybe not the most encouraging overall game that they've played, but to get the win, to get those saves from Sorokin, to get those goals from Wahlstrom does leave you with a sense of hope. And that's where we are today, where again, if we had done this, you know, a couple of days ago, we would not have that sense of hope, but you know, there are signs here. Oh, and more importantly, to get back to what you were saying, the D pairs were juggled at one point. Pelech was ended up playing with Chara, Green and Dobson were back together. Mayfield and Pulock were playing together for a little while. I think Chara and Pulock may have played together for a little while. And Trotz said also later that, you know, they might stick with those. So maybe juggling up the D pairs would be helpful. Eventually, everything will click, but certainly more things clicked in that Blackhawks game after the first, you know, half of the game or so than had clicked in either of the first two games combined. So, you know, seeing Wahlstrom score those two goals was really, really cool. I mean, he looked very excited, and he now leads the team in goals. Yeah. So that's pretty impressive. And it's only three games, but hey, good for you, man.
Yeah, like, what do you have, eight shots?
Yes, eight shots.
Crazy. Yeah, that was about as dominant a game from a non-Matt Barzal forward that we've seen in,
for sure,
probably since Matt Barzal came to the team, I think. Sorokin, you know, he's such a likable player, just from top to bottom, from the saga to get him here to the way he played, and just his very Nabokovian kind of sense of humor. Is everybody's obviously rooting for him because he's an Islander, but even more so, he just seems to really be just a great kind of athlete to root for. Right. And so it was really just awesome to see him put on a show. Mm. I think knowing that they won, looking back on it, I think it was a good thing that they kind of came out flat and he had to steal that first period. Just in terms of like his confidence and the team's confidence in him, knowing that, okay, he's right. Like, Ilya Sorokin has checked into the 2021-2022 season. Now it's time for the rest of the team too. And they did. They slowly but surely got there. And I think, yeah, everyone was so focused on Sorokin, and it was fair. The save on DeBrincat was great. He made a couple of really encouraging saves where the puck was, he made a save and, you know, there was a scramble in front and he was able to snuff out those scrambles. And then, he was great, but the third line again, and this is what I was getting to, like, you could see the signs of it. And then the second game still, and then this game with Wahlstrom in basically beast mode, that third line was awesome. And it just, I was joking that I want them to like show up to a first birthday party as like, he would hire like a petting zoo or something and just be like, you know, gather all the kids around and throw like a puck to a corner and be like, you know, have Zach Parise go get it. get it to Peugeot and Peugeot to no look pass to Wahlstrom and just keep repeating that. I wanted to keep watching. I wish they were playing in front of me right now. They were, that was such a joy to watch every time they're on the ice because they all do such, you know, if they do things. It's very, very rare to get like a line that fits together just like that right off the bat. And what did we say all off season long about Parisi and even going back to last year when they were calling up, they were kind of easing Wahlstrom into the lineup when they got Palmieri. What do you do with a new player? You put him with J.G. Pageau because he can play, he can adapt his game to anybody. I mean, he took a shift when Casey Cizikas lost his skate blade with the fourth line. And that was the first time I was like, oh, wow, that, you, it makes sense that Pageau would be the one to just be able to morph into Casey Cizikas. He is the, he's a hockey chameleon. He can basically play any role and he plays it well. And I just was really encouraged by that line. And I think they were, so while the rest of the team was, Sorokin showed up, that line showed up and the rest of the team eventually caught up to him. And also, like you alluded to, like the blender, the line blenders, like it wasn't just the D pairings, but because Bellows was, oh God, not good. I mean, you just wonder, because everybody on the Islanders are known, anytime they're brought up by the national mainstream hockey media, they talk about how everybody on this team is bought in to the team philosophy, to Barry Trotz and his coaching, to Lou Lamoriello's kind of culture or whatever. But it's pretty clear that Bellows still has to figure out how he's supposed to do that. And he hasn't at all. I think you can see it. Like there are a couple plays like at the blue line where you if you weren't looking for him, probably wouldn't notice, but he just would lose a battle in like a bad way. It wasn't like he lost because he was going up against a big defenseman like Seth Jones or whatever. It was because he was trying to win it with just his stick. He wasn't really engaged in these little battles. And all of a sudden you got a 2-on-1 going the other way, because of that, because the rest of the team is expecting him to at least slow down the transition, because that's what they're all doing. Like they're all saying, all right, like there's a puck along the boards. You know, if J.G. Pageau is there, if Anders Lee's there, whoever, they're going to do everything they can to, if, at the very least, they might not win the battle, to slow it down. And Bellows doesn't do that. And you just got to wonder at some point, like, it's either going to click or it's not. And it sucks because he was a first round pick. But then you look at the guy in the minors, Michael Dal-Cole, and you know, say what you want about Michael Dal-Cole. He certainly is a bust compared to where he was drafted, but he does that stuff. He will battle at the boards. He'll go dig pucks out and he won't be a liability in that way. So
the two things about Bellows that I remember, one, he missed a defensive assignment. He went to go cover a guy that I think was already being covered or probably the guy who shouldn't have been covered. And that led to a scoring chance. And then the other time he actually ended up getting kind of like a breakaway chance. Like he was kind of sent up the middle of the ice, but his skating just isn't quite there. And so the Blackhawks guy was literally on him like a cape, like he was just hanging off of him. And it reminded me of, you know, when you used to play like NHL 94 and like somebody like Mick Vokoda used to get a breakaway, you know, it was exciting because you're like, oh, he's by himself. But then you remember that he has like, you know, a speed rating of 22 and you're kind of like, come on, come on, come on. And then, you know, the guy is right behind you and you end up not getting anything. And I was just like, yeah, that's not good. That's
and
not
and good. If you're the only, he's the only guy of the 20 that show up.
Right.
That's not doing, you know,
yeah,
that's exactly. why it's so you're like, oh man. Like, and not only the only guy of the people that are there, but Trotz and Lou are, I mean, this is basically a cult now, right? Like we all know too. Like we show up to work at the same, to do the same thing that they do. You know, if Barry Trotz gave you an Islanders jersey and said, hey, Dan, you're playing on the fourth line left wing. Yeah. You would be a disaster, but you would know exactly what he wanted out of you in every situation.
Yeah.
But somehow this guy doesn't.
In fairness to Bellows, and again, he was not good. I'm not disagreeing with you. In fairness, he probably didn't know he was going to play that night until about two hours before the game. So, like, you know, they were expecting Lee, and Lee showed up, and he was green, I think, is what Trotz said. So, yeah.
but I would say Bellows, outside of Bellows, everything else in the second and third period, because of the way the Islanders were coached, like with the line matching and the switching of the defense pairing, someone on that staff saw something, it clicked, it worked. There was one one part of the game. It was Brock Nelson gained the zone, and he did a good job. And the Islanders were ready to be set up. But one thing that everything changed with the lines, like, he dumped the puck in and around, and it would have been where I think it was Green should have been. And like, that's the thing of the lack of mobility does, like, that puck ends up going out of the zone. So like, it was no harm, no foul, because Green then got the puck and they restarted. But you know, when you have someone with a little bit more foot speed, like, even those things, like Nick Leddy, those are things we probably took for granted with Leddy for all his shortcomings, was Brock Nelson rims that puck around, like, Nick Leddy's there to at least corral it or have it hop over his stick because he's not looking at it, you know, this is the one want to go the other way, but at least he's there. And you know, Char and Green just aren't quick enough for that stuff. And that'll take some time for the other guys to adapt to. And I think actually in a similar case, like, Barzal made a really nice play in the corner that ended up, I think, on that Bellows chance. And he took like half a second went to make that pass, because I think he saw, he's like, I don't know if I want to pass it to this guy in the slot. Like, I might try to maybe beat one or two other guys or keep it going. And but yeah, so those kind of things will take some time, and you just hope that eventually it'll all work out. But they did really find their game. And one thing to, you know, take solace in is that usually when they do kind of start clicking, they click for a while.
Yeah,
you know, we've seen this over the years with Trotz. It's like, they're such a form team. So it looks like they found it a little bit. Would like to see more from Josh Bailey, who I think he started the season last year like this too. I remember, I remember them playing like the Flyers early in the season and being like, this might be the worst game I've ever seen Josh Bailey play. And then the next game he shows up and he's really good. So it just takes him a little while maybe to get going. But it felt just really good to watch them hug each other at the end of the game too. And
let out a deep sigh of relief and exhale. And actually the Islanders' next game is actually in Columbus, the site of Josh Bailey's only NHL hat trick, I believe. So that should be a good one. Real quick on the Blackhawks before we take a break. So, you know, they draw a lot of attention. They it's funny to me that, like, you know, the Islanders have had success over the last couple of seasons. They've gotten to the point where people think that they could contend for a Stanley Cup. Meanwhile, the Blackhawks, their last Stanley Cup was 6 years ago. they have not been particularly good in the last couple of seasons, and they basically just went out. They've embroiled in all kinds of off the ice issues. Meanwhile, they go out, they trade for a bunch of dudes, and then it's like, okay, we're a contender again. And it's like, are you? Are you really a contender? Is that really what we have here? Because I see a bunch of dudes that are pretty good. Some guys are older, some guys are younger, some guys have been good here, some guys have been good elsewhere. I don't know. I feel like this team was incredibly overrated. I think, you know, eventually they'll probably find their way and those guys will figure stuff out. But like, if you follow any Blackhawks fans, it's very clear who the problem is in this room. And it's not Seth Jones, and it's not Marc-Andre Fleury. It is the coach, who you may remember, some of you may remember Jeremy Colleton, as the guy who almost kept getting called up from Bridgeport when he was an Islander. Like, he would get up called up maybe once a year or twice a year, but it was always like, oh, maybe they could call up Colleton, and then it would never call Colleton. There would be somebody else. It's very strange. And so my friends were like, hey, I hope that, you know, maybe this is the time that they'll finally fire the coach. And I'm like, the Islanders do have a history of, you know, leading directly to coach firings by beating a team. So, you know, it's possible that could happen. So I just thought it was kind of funny that.
Yeah, John Tortorella is probably just in Chicago right now, waiting. That's what that team's got to get sorted out. And can you imagine Seth Jones being like, oh my God.
Could you imagine Taves and Torts together? Like, I don't know. Claude Julien, by the way, also still out there, which I completely forgot about. So I said to my friends, you guys, they should hire Jack Capuano. I don't know if he's a much better coach than Jeremy Colleton, but he's definitely a better, more of a character. And so at least you'd have some fun there. You know,
I liked the Colleton. He called a timeout after they went down 4-0.
Yeah.
And like, it was like, what, like 8 minutes left of the game? Like, you're doing this now? Like, what are you doing? And I do feel bad for him because he's an Islander legend.
He followed an actual legend in Joel Quenneville.
I know, right? Like, that's tough.
So, yeah.
Yeah. But that team was such a mess defensively, even like in Quenneville's like last hurrah, because they
yes.
just they are every player on that defense was just a husk of himself. I think Johnny Oduya was still taking shifts for them, and then
right.
You know, so it and it just I guess seemingly ran its course, and but yeah, there's just teams that just the NHL, it's they just need to
right.
not succeed, but just to like give off the like a mirage that they are like if you didn't watch the NHL and then in March if we asked you like all right like just from like watching commercials or hearing little radio snippets here or there, highlight packages on SportsCenter or whatever people watch these days, like we're on NHL.com, whatever, who do you think is good? They probably name the right teams and then be like, are the Blackhawks good? Because they seem to be on, you know, NBC or ESPN now all the time, and I see these highlights of like Patrick Kane, and people are always talking about Patrick Kane. I'm like, no, they actually suck. So, you
know, yeah,
it's just the weirdest marketing ploy.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of guys that I think have a lot of fans in the sort of media circles too. And so, you know, I'm not saying that it's a lost cause. I mean, for all we know, they could fire Colleton tomorrow, hire Tortorella or Claude Julien or somebody else, and go on a run and, you know, make it to the playoffs. I'm just saying that it's right now, this team is a bit of a mess. and it almost felt like they put so much pressure on the Islanders in that game and came away with nothing after two periods, that once the Islanders started getting more pressure of their own and started scoring on their own, they just sort of folded and they just didn't quite know what to do at that point. So to stop the bleeding. So it's a very weird position to be in where you have more faith in your team than the Chicago Blackhawks. But again, 2015 was a long time ago. I didn't even realize that was their last cup. And this morning I was like, wow, that was a long time ago. I watched it. The Lightning now have won two straight and the Blackhawks can't even make the playoffs. Anyway, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about the next three games and a bunch of other stuff that's come up in the league the last couple of days. So come back in a couple of minutes. All right, thanks. Our favorite sponsor is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. They have stuff with the Long Island Ducks, New York Golden Blades, Las Vegas Thunder, Albany Choppers, all kinds of cool stuff. They also have our Al Arbor t-shirts, and our portion of the sales go directly to the Center for Dementia Research. You can use the code LIGHTHOUSE15 to save yourself 15%. They are open all year long, so go buy some cool stuff. They're adding new stuff every day, so check it out. It's VintageIceHockey.com. Okay, so those are the games the Islanders have played. It's a packed week for the Islanders. They got three more games this week. Holy crap, including the one Thursday night, probably the day you're listening to this, in Columbus. They started out with a win, I believe, and then they lost another game. Another team kind of finding themselves. They traded Seth Jones to the Blackhawks. So Patrick Laine seems engaged now. Probably has something to do with John Tortorella not being there anymore. But that's, you know, not a place that the Islanders have had a ton of success, but they have won games there. Again, Josh Bailey had that hat trick there. And then the weekend is going to be really interesting because they are in Glendale, Arizona on Saturday night, 9 o'clock start against one of the two worst teams in the league. Right now, the Sabres keep winning, so maybe they're not the worst team in the league. But right now, the corpse, the husk, as you said before, of the Arizona Coyotes is playing, and they've got a bunch of old dudes. And that's not to say to take them lightly, because the Islanders haven't won in Arizona in your lifetime and possibly not ever in my lifetime. So getting a win there would be kind of an enormous thing, no matter who's on that team or not. But then the next night, they're in Vegas, which is a tough one back-to-back. They do have a week off after that. Their next game, I believe, is like the following Friday or Saturday. So they do have plenty of time off after that. But boy, that's a tough level. Yeah. Back to back, man. Arizona and Vegas. Oh, geez. And you're coming from Columbus?
Yeah, exactly. That's the weird part. It's like right. they start like heading towards home, and then like psych.
Yeah.
Southwest.
Right.
Yeah. So. I think that Arizona game, first of all, we'll have to pencil in a couple goals for Andrew Ladd.
Oh, so definitely.
The Islanders are already down. What do I remember about playing the Coyotes? Well, of course, Shane Doan scored his only hat trick ever in, what, yep, 7,000 NHL games against the Islanders. So I don't know if that was in Arizona or not, but that's definitely something I remember. And I remember that this was a positive. The game where the Coyotes had a major and they had someone serving it that wasn't the person who committed the penalty or something. And the Islanders had like an extended power play, which I'd never seen before, because they caught that guy. That guy was in the penalty box for longer than the penalty actually lasted. And they had this like power play.
That's right. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
It was a Capuano coach team. I don't remember what year it was. Or I think the Islanders ended up scoring on this quasi power play in a fourth dimension or whatever it was. But that's another thing I remember. But yeah, that game is definitely really scary because of how it comes. Like you have to get, you need 2 points out of Columbus, and if you get one, whatever. But like if you don't get two out of Columbus, then you definitely need two in Arizona because yeah, Vegas, even they probably won't have, they definitely won't have Max Pacioretty, it looks like, and they probably probably
or Mark won't Stone have or Stone. Kelly Yonkrock, I think is also
I think, and like they're missing their biggest asset is depth, and they don't have any depth right now because four or five forwards are hurt. So, yeah, they got to, but it's still going to be tough. That's a really tough place to play or whatever. And, so the, you're just hoping that this team, and Trotz alluded to it too, I think before the Chicago game, saying he didn't really care too much about the result, but just the way that they played. And I think that's still fair, especially this early in the season, that, if the Islanders come back, near, you know, 500. Because like you said, there's a week off. First of all, like I was really upset about the 2 days off, and if they don't do well in these next three games, you got to stew over it for a week.
Their next game after the 24th in Vegas is the 30th in Nashville, so they have a full week off. So Sunday to Saturday,
and I think they're coming home in between two or something. I remember seeing.
Yeah, so, and then they have four days off in between the game in Nashville and then a game in Montreal. So. Yeah, it's weird.
And yeah, so it's just there's gonna be a lot of downtime to either stew about losses or be happy and encouraged about the way things are going. You hope it's the latter, but yeah, it's this Columbus game will be interesting because their goaltenders have been really good. Korpisalo was really good against the Red Wings last night, but Merzlikins won his first two starts, or got at least got 3 out of 4 points and played really well. And they seem to be kind of a little rejuvenated under now that they don't have, you know, John Tortorella or whatever going on. I think you get those 2 points tomorrow. The Islanders are a better team. They're going to be decent favorite on the road. They were favored yesterday in Chicago, so there's no reason they won't be in Columbus. And you need to get those 2 points because you know, one and three is not good. So 2-2 is a lot better than 1-3. Don't really care how they get them. And it's also important to note that it looks like Semyon Varlamov is coming back for one of the games in the Southwest, too. And that there were so many different things going on with Sorokin. You think that like maybe he put too much pressure on himself without Varlamov, and maybe the fact that Varlamov was like skating and took like a full practice before Chicago calmed him down or something, but it's just good to have him back in the fold, and to see him actually play in a game will be really good. And it'll feel like the season kind of is really starting once you see him kind of take the crease. Cause that's it. That's basically it. Like nobody else is on the sidelines cause Martin's back and Varlamov. And so
yeah,
that's what I'm looking forward to the most, I guess.
I am predicting that Varlamov will start in Arizona because he's been practicing. I think he gets another night off in, you know, Columbus. But then by the time they get to Arizona, I think he'll probably be ready. And also, I mean, let's be honest, there's a little bit less firepower on the Coyotes than they have in Vegas. So I feel like that makes the most sense. And again, you have all that time off. So, you know, if something goes awry, you can always be like, you know, here's what happened. Let's work on it and then figure it out. So I think that'll happen. These are three games, and you know, you never want to take anything too much for granted. Obviously, you know, we could talk shit about the Coyotes all day, but you know, they're still going to have dudes that can score, and we've seen them lose. We've seen the Islanders lose to every iteration of the Coyotes possible in Glendale. Like we saw them lose to the good versions, the bad versions, to like, you know, Shane Doan and 30 guys off the street version. So like, we don't want to, you know, sugarcoat that. And then Vegas obviously is very hard, and so is Columbus. But yeah, I mean, if they can come back, so if you've started with six games and if they could come back, you know, 3-3, better still, you know, 4-2. I think, you know, we would all take that as being pretty successful. 3-3, I think, would be, you know, you could sort of say, okay, that's fine. That was probably the best possible option there. But, you know, 4-2 would be a heck of a lot better. It still is early, and, you know, it's weird to look at the standings and you'd be like, oh, the Penguins have 5 points and the Islanders only have two. I think they have 6 points and the Penguins have, and the Islanders have two. And so you can kind of drive yourself a little bit crazy, but it's extremely early. The Islanders have two huge long breaks coming up where the other teams, you know, the Penguins could definitely play two games or three games in the time it takes the Islanders to play two, from between Vegas and Nashville, another town that they haven't really had a lot of luck in either. So, a lot can happen, and we don't want to make too much of a big deal about these things. I don't want to tell people not to panic, because it's always like, you know, people can panic about all kinds. I panic about stuff literally all day, every day. So I mean, it's not like, you know, I'm not going to tell you that, but it is early. That's all I really want.
It's important to like just to read not to panic from someone who's supposed to be detached from the team, like a, you know, report. But like, of course, we were panicking. The team started 0-2. What could be worse? You know, what could be worse than 0-2 with all these expectations? And you just start thinking about how. That was the thing. One of the things I was really not looking forward to was after the Panthers loss, was like whether on Sirius NHL radio or whatever, just being like, you know, maybe we got ahead of ourselves with the Islanders or whatever. Luckily, nobody seemed to really notice that the Islanders started 0-2 and just kind of gave them a pass. Like, and I also kept reminding myself too, like, if this was 3 or 4 years ago and the Penguins started 0-2. And I saw that and I'll be like, oh, the Penguins will be fine. You know, that's how I was like, there's a million hockey fans out there who are looking at the standings, seeing the Islanders 0-2, being, oh, the Islanders will be fine. There's nothing I see here. So that's kind of how I would calm myself down. It didn't work though. I was panicking.
Well, between the Blackhawks being 0-3, now 0-4, and the Habs being 0-4, like there's a lot more oxygen being used on those two teams than on ours, because the prevailing wisdom is that the Islanders will eventually straighten.
Yeah, and wouldn't you know,
Habs, not so much.
And wouldn't you know that somehow the Seattle Kraken aren't the second best team in the NHL? They're struggling too. God, it's just, that was something just to see that the way they started for. Oh man, yeah. I guess maybe Jerry McCann isn't the first line center that everyone thought he was going to be, because he's never been a first line center in his life. So, yeah, there's been some funny things that have happened. Like, I don't even want to get into the Sabres, whatever. I'm more interested.
How many times did we see the Islanders start, like,
that's
super hot and then fall apart?
You know? I think the season when James Wisniewski was here, they started pretty well. They played the Rangers. I think they played pretty well in, like, a back-to-back against the Rangers. And someone in the New York Times wrote, like, about how the New York rivalry was coming back. And as soon as that article was published, the Islanders went ahead and lost like 11 games in a row or something. I was thinking similarly to what I was saying about like the Penguins analogy a couple minutes ago. I was saying the same thing about the Sabres. Like, I remember when the Islanders would start season 3-1-1, and everyone around the league was probably like, oh, look at that, that's so adorable. Maybe like a couple extra people show up to their next game and get a couple Islander shirts before they have to lose, you know, for the rest of the season. And that's kind of how people are talking about the Sabres. That's the Sabres. That's not as interesting. I think the Red Wings have been pretty interesting because the way they blew that lead. I had a bet on them that night, so that sucked. But and then all of a sudden they started just like fighting everybody the past couple of games. Like Dylan Larkin got suspended, and last night against the Blue Jackets they were rabble rousing, and so they've been kind of funny. And this is, you know, to a point that I wanted to get to, was that the NHL is on ESPN Plus, and I didn't realize until like the day of the season starting that the ESPN Plus is now NHL TV.
Yes, yes.
So, and nobody marketed it, and everybody like there's a lot of people I know who are big sports fan have ESPN Plus already, and somehow the NHL didn't realize that it would be a good idea to be like, hey, everybody, you probably already have the service.
I feel like I've seen stuff say that like they have X number of out of market games or whatever, but they never made it explicitly clear.
Yeah, which like, is just all you need to do. Because think about how confusing streaming, trying to figure out a game, what streaming service it's on now, right? Like, all they needed to do is like, hey, if you want to watch NHL, just get ESPN Plus, or if you have it, it's there.
Yeah,
because I didn't realize it. Now I'm being able to tune into these games all the time.
Yeah. I got the bundle because we already had Disney Plus. We were using a family member's Hulu account. They were using our Netflix account. That's kind of a, you know, a little bit of a back scratching going on there. But I was like, you know, once ESPN gets this Islanders, you know, Islanders games are going to be on ESPN Plus exclusively. They're going to have the full out of market stuff. I feel like we should just get the bundle. So we signed up for it. And I had not had the bundle since the Tavares thing. Once he left, I canceled my NHL TV. I had Game Center Live, so I could watch on computer and stuff like that. I canceled it. So this is the first time in 4 years that I've had it again. And I have to get back into the habit of being like, I'm paying for these games. I need to watch these. So I had the end of the Wild Jets game on last night. Then I was watching Oilers and Ducks. They were both pretty exciting games. But yeah, so I mean, it's if you do the bundle, I mean, it makes sense. Like, I think it's like $14 a month, and you get all three of those services, and you can watch, you know, whatever. And it's pretty good. You could choose like what broadcast you want to watch. I just want to, before I forget, just a little bit now. I just noticed I've been if you are interested in following with the Kraken on their first season, SB Nation does have a blog for them. It's called Davy Jones Locker Room, which is like the coolest name. Like, that's an awesome name. That's great. You know, they should get Bill Nighy from Pirates of the Caribbean to show up and be like Davy Jones. But you should follow them. You can follow them on Twitter. And I'm noticing now that they are just now noticing that Jordan Eberle is a bit of a slow starter in seasons. And I'm just sitting here laughing, like, how cute this is that these guys just now realize that this guy, you know, sometimes he goes 10 games, you know, 8 games without scoring a goal before the season. It's like, Ebbs won't show the real Ebbs won't show up until like at least April. That's when you really want to get on the Eberle train. But it is kind of fun.
Yeah, they didn't really go below the surface with Eberle when they were talking about, oh, this guy is their best goal scorer. And I just want to be like, yeah, he is. But there was some, let me give you the baggage, right? Like, you're going to see at least 6 opportunities where he's going to have a wide open net. And 2 seconds later, he's just going to be looking up to the rafters because he rang it off the crossbar or something. And it was kind of like the gut. I was waiting for first of all, Ray Ferraro is great. I know we say this a lot, but sorry, Elvis is playing with his toy right next to me.
That's all right.
But I didn't really notice it until, like, I didn't really, because it's become like a hip thing to say, I guess, in hockey Twitter. It's like, oh, Ferraro's the best. But he's awesome. Like, he was really great to listen to last night. But I was waiting for them to talk about the Gustafsson thing, that he literally was playing with all these guys a couple weeks ago in Islander colors and on a PTO. Because he was all over the place. He wasn't good, I would say. but he certainly was playing. Like, he was like engaged. Him and Matt Martin were like joking around, and they didn't bring it up. I was a little disappointed in that.
I thought the broadcast was okay. A lot of people I'm already seeing don't like Sean McDonough doing the play by play. I think he's fine. I don't know. I'd rather have.
He's just like very down the line. He's like a horse with blinders on.
Yeah. I did notice him call the puck the ball at one time. I guess he lapsed into, like, you know, Monday Night Football mode or whatever. I'm over catchphrases. Like, I'm just done with them now. And so it's nice to have a hockey broadcast without catchphrases. And like the NBC crew, it was literally 3 guys or 4 guys with different catchphrases. And it's just enough already. You know,
yeah.
I will make an exception if they bring in Darren Pang to do games, to do the Holy Jumpin'.
Holy Jumpin' is the best. I was watching Blues Coyotes actually the other night on ESPN Plus just because I want to listen to Darren. It's so much fun to hear him talk. It's like it's like if you took all the good things that I like about Pierre Maguire, I know a lot of people don't, and made him likable. You know, because he's like he's just so enthusiastic. He just loves doing what he's doing, and then he's just but he's just not as annoying.
Yeah, I know people really wanted like Gary Thorne to come back when ESPN got the thing, but I'll take Pang. Pang is enough of a connection to the 90s to enjoy it, and I like it. I hope they bring him back because I do.
Holy Jumpin'.
Yeah.
Where does that even come from?
It doesn't make any sense at all, but I like it. The other thing, too, so, so those are the games. I mean, there's not much we can really say. The Islanders really should try and win at least 2 of them, and if they do, I think they'll be in good shape into their little break, and they can get some practice time in, which would be nice, because honestly, when you take a road trip, sometimes you don't get a lot of practice time, but they're going to get some because they're going to come back to the island, which is nice. a couple of things going on sort of off the ice this week. Our friend Arthur Staple announced on Tuesday that he's going to be moving to a different position at the Athletic. He's going to be basically a columnist covering both the Islanders and Rangers. Rick Carpinello will be leaving the beat, and they're going to bring in somebody else. I'm kind of assuming that that person is going to cover both the Islanders and Rangers together. So we both, everybody gets kind of, you know, one reporter and then one columnist. Art is still going to be there, still writing about the Islanders. He wrote about each team so far this week. And his first story about the Rangers really kind of blew a lot of people's minds. So Vitali Kravtsov was a first round pick, hasn't quite cracked the lineup. The Rangers are this world-beating, fantastic team that he can't crack the lineup for, I guess. I don't know. And, well, he did, like a lot of people, when they are told that they need to do this, did not want to go to Hartford. If you've been to Hartford, you know what it's like. It's not exactly the most metropolitan city in the world. And Kravtsov didn't want to be there. And he's asked for a trade. Apparently, he and Drury are like oil and water. They've been arguing, and there's been words exchanged in a couple of different times over the course of the last couple of years. And so it's... You know, this high first round pick wanting a trade is obviously not a good sign, but it has led to Rangers fans questioning Chris Drury even more than they did over the summer when he got, you know, signed Barclay Goodrow. They traded for Ryan Reeves. Now, a lot of Rangers fans are very much questioning the direction of this franchise under this guy. And I'll tell you guys what I told Art, which is that, I promise to actually read some of his Ranger stuff, but only the bad stuff. That's the only thing I want to read. I don't want to read any of the good news stuff. I want to read only the bad stuff. And I got to tell you, this first story did not disappoint. So if you're like, oh man, Staples got to cover the Rangers. Trust me, you're going to want to read the bad stuff, and you're going to want to search out this Kravtsov story, because there's a lot of bad stuff in there. And it's fun. It's fun to watch them kind of fall apart a little bit this early in the season.
Yeah, it's a great distraction for them to deal with, especially because in the middle of the Islanders' season-ruining, panic-inducing two-game losing streak, the Rangers beat the Maple Leafs in a game that Igor Shesterkin played amazing in, and I was like, this is great. Like, this
guy's made a save like 10 feet in front of the net.
Going to ruin my life. Yeah, making just absurd stuff. And yeah, to have that come hit the presses the next day was really just great timing, very calming, made me feel pretty good about just the world in general. I think it's hilarious that Chris Drury, well, first of all, John Buchegross, like even before, the only hockey player that the NHL, I mean, ESPN ever talked about during when it didn't have the NHL was Chris Drury, because of something with John Buchegross. Like him were like great friends. It was like he was his agent or something. And he's almost like in like the Tkachuk family kind of way, but with American media. Like they love him. He's won the Little League World Series. Isn't that adorable? Full disclosure, my college roommate's sister is married to Chris Drury, so hopefully he's not listening. Yeah, it's great just to see that this move that was so obviously Dolan constructed is probably not, or it doesn't seem like it's off and running right now. And there Drury's already in the thick of a kind of like a PR battle in New York City sports, which is never good. And obviously it's hockey, so nobody's going to talk about it. But if it does blow up a little bit or they start to struggle, it's going to look bad for him pretty quickly. And this Kravtsov thing, yeah, I mean, you couldn't have asked for a better start to Art Staples' new beat, because that was perfect. And the more of that, the better. And hopefully it just keeps coming and that whole situation unravels. My hope, my conspiracy theory here is that Drury was the one who was in cahoots with the KGB or whoever was after Panarin last year. Maybe that's my hope, at least, is that he's somehow trying to get Panarin out of town because they don't like each other. Because that would really be great if he's gone. And obviously,
yeah.
It was fun to watch. I'm gonna call it the secondary market of content, because you know people always just make content out of content. Like, so Arthur's piece hit the Athletic, and the next thing you know, like three Rangers blogs are like, "What are we gonna do about Chris Drury?" It was just really fun to watch that whole thing unravel and be like, "Oh, this is this is just the beginning. So it's kind of like the NFL email saga. Like, I just want more and more, more things to keep happening, more things to keep going wrong for them.
Yeah, exactly. Also at the Athletic, as we alluded to before, Sarah Sivian is now writing like a sort of fashion roundup of NHL players. Again, don't expect to see any Islanders on there. They're too boring. She covers the Hurricanes. She probably already hates them. There's going to be too many guys wearing ties and socks and with short hair. So they're not going to be like, you know, on the high end of the fashion scale. But it's nice that the Athletic covers something other than the Leafs for a second. So that's pretty good. That was the other big thing too, was like, so the Leafs didn't have enough money to call up Michael Hutchinson to back up Jack Campbell in goal on Saturday. And of course, this is like a national emergency, you know? And so you've got guys saying like, actually, this is a good thing that this happened. You've got Carlo Colaiacovo who talks, yeah, literally for Sportsnet, complaining about that. They got to get rid of the cap. This is ridiculous. So yeah, it's the cap's fault that this team has four guys making $60 million and not enough money under the cap to call up the backup. It's definitely the cap's fault, right? That this happened. You know, this guy, Alex Bishop, he was like the University of Toronto goalie. He's practiced with them. It's such a great story. He didn't actually play in the game, so he didn't get like the sort of David Ayers moment there. But it was just like a raging fire of why is this happening? Who cares? Like, you know, people are laughing at the Leafs. People are laughing at the league. Alan Walsh is chiming in about it was a complete mess. For a guy that literally sat on a bench with a baseball cap on with the Leafs jersey on. And then they called up Hutchinson the next day anyway. So, no.
But my favorite part of that whole saga is that the Leafs were rated on the Athletic's model as the second best goaltending tandem in the league, despite the fact that the two goalies, and yeah, Jack Campbell was very good last year and he's had a good start this year, but him and Mrazek, I think, combined to play like 30 games last year. Yeah. Mrazek played like 11. Yeah. And wouldn't you know, he gets hurt right away because he's a goalie that not only has he been inconsistent at times, but he's also injury prone. And guess what? So is Jack Campbell. And I don't really think you're taking into account that is very important. You know, you can have as many good goalies as you want, but if they don't play, then Michael Hutchinson or some guy who was just in biology 101 is going to be playing. So it's like, the secondary content cycle or whatever it is was hilarious as well. Like, yeah, like you said, some people saying that this was like brave, like the way the Leafs take chances like this is like a new way to do it. Come on. Like if this is the Islanders, like during the Gar Snow era, like it would be mocked on some sort of ESPN or Yahoo blog or whatever.
How has the NHL not taken control of the Islanders to not let these sorts of things happen? What an embarrassment that franchise is. They don't have, you know, whatever it is, 100,000, 750 grand to call up a goal. Not even. I don't know what his number is. But yeah, no. For anybody else, again, this is a huge scandal. For the Leafs, it's a way for us to laugh. But then it's like, no, actually, it's good. Again, you don't have the space because you have four guys making $60 million. Like, it's not rocket science. Don't do that. And, you know, you wouldn't have these kinds of problems. Oh, and by the way, Morgan Riley's a UFA at the end of the season, too. So good luck with that. Anyway, I think that's about it. Couple of things I just wanted to mention real quick. I tweeted this out before. I posted a thing about it at Lighthouse Hockey. Also, the second season of Islanders Award Winners, the podcast, is in production. New episodes are going to come out next year. There's a little snippet there of our first episode, which will be about Brian Trottier's rookie season where he won the Calder Trophy. The guy went on to win so many awards that we kind of forget about, or maybe in a lot of cases didn't even know about, how mind-boggling his rookie season was. He scored 95 points. Nobody had ever really done that before. He blew the previous record before that was Marcel Dion 77. So he blew that out of the water. He broke all kinds of records and yet had a lot of adversity too. And you can find out why when the full episode releases sometime next year. So check that out if you haven't already. I really enjoy doing it, and the hiatus has been too long, so I hope people enjoy it. Second thing is, it was on ESPN2 last night. It's on ESPN Plus now. As we said, if you have the bundle, you pay for it, you get all these documentaries and 30 for 30 things too. It's an episode of the E60 program called A Love Story, and it tells the story of Brianna LaFontaine and her fiance, Randell McCoy. They both came from very different worlds, and their relationship was rocked with a tragedy. Brianna is obviously the daughter of Pat LaFontaine, but that is just a very, very small aspect of the story. And I feel like, you know, I almost feel bad like saying, oh, it's you know, got an Islanders connection, because this is really, this transcends Islanders hockey, whatever. Like, this is a really, really heart-wrenching and affecting story about two people that fell in love and have to overcome this terrible thing. I don't want to give too much away, but if you get a chance to check it out on ESPN2 or on ESPN+, definitely. It's called E60, and it's called A Love Story. The other story in that episode is about Elvis Merzlikins, who you mentioned before, and his one-time goalie partner, Matthijs Kivlenyks, who passed away this summer after a fireworks mishap in at their house of their goalie coach, Manny Legacy, in Michigan. Elvis, he and Kivlenyks were tighter than friends. They were like brothers. And his death really affected him and his wife and the Blue Jackets as a whole. And so you should definitely check it out. And you'll be rooting for Elvis after that, for sure, if you weren't already, because his name is Elvis Merzlikins, and he seems like a cool dude. But it's, you know, you heard the story about the story, maybe you didn't follow up on it, you should definitely check it out. So that's E60 on ESPN+. And finally, I know you've all heard about this before. Mike Bossy has taken leave of absence from his job at TVA Sports in Montreal in order to receive treatment for lung cancer. It goes without saying that we're all wishing nothing but the best for Bossy and hoping for the speediest recovery possible, hoping that he beats this. He didn't really give a whole lot of details, but you know, he wants to take care of this in private, which is obviously what he should have if that's what he wants, 100%. But lots of people are rooting for him, including all of us, and we hope to see him as healthy as he can be at UBS Arena at some point, watching the Islanders in their new home. And good luck to Mike Bossy in beating lung cancer, because that was a hard one. It was a hard one to write, and I've just, in judging by the comments, it's a hard one for people to read. So a lot of us are pulling for him to you know, beat this.
Yeah, here. I was watching the Red Wings Blue Jackets game on ESPN+, and Mickey Redman, who's just a joy to listen to.
He really is.
It's like
he's like their Butch, basically.
Yeah, he calls a game. He calls a game, and like he's just sitting on the couch talking to his grandkid, and it's great. But he hearing him and whoever was the play-by-play, I can't remember his name, they were talking about the Bossy news, and it's just so funny to hear other people in other kind of parts of the hockey world talk about that dynasty, because obviously I wasn't around for it or whatever, and like just the way that they were looked at and like looked up at is they talked for like 5 minutes, like just about the resume of not just Bossy, but that whole team. So yeah, definitely rooting for him to beat it.
Yeah. Ferraro talked about it. Mark Messier and the intermissions talked about it. And yeah, I mean, Bossy at this point, I mean, I don't need to tell anybody here, but like he has like achieved sort of mythical status at this point, you know, his exploits. If you told somebody that he scored 1,000 goals in a season, they'd probably believe it, you know, but it's just a one of a kind. So yeah, all the best to him and hope and his family. And we're hoping he pulls through. Okay. Wow. This was a long one and a heavy one. And it's just the first week of the season. Jeez. Okay. We should wrap it up, I guess, pretty quickly. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read his work at the Action Network. What podcast are you going to be on anytime
soon? We actually launched a soccer betting podcast. Yeah, it's an interesting story, actually. Like, before the Euros, I was telling our boss, like, we should do a podcast on our main Action Network podcast feed for the Euros. It's a big deal. He comes from ESPN, not a huge soccer guy. Didn't really think it was going to do well or whatever, but there was nothing else really going on. So we said, yeah, and it just did well, like, audience-wise. And so we got a green light to do a Premier League preview and a Champions League preview, and they all did well. And we were bought by a Danish company a few months ago, and they obviously love soccer. So they made it like kind of a priority to launch a soccer betting podcast. So here I am hosting a soccer betting podcast called it's called Wonder Goal. It's Mondays and Thursdays. And we're actually running a contest right now for similar to our Isles eBay contest, which we'll bring back for November, by the way. I'm happy to do that. But if you go to Wonder Goal and you leave a rating and a review and your Twitter handle, you automatically get entered to win a soccer jersey of your choice from this year. Yeah, we'll pick one randomly to give away. So
yeah,
yep. A little shilling.
That's cool. Yeah. Football fans, yeah, it works, you know? If it gets you some reviews, it works.
It's just funny because they ended up in this spot kind of out of nowhere. And now it's like, you know, there's a little bit of pressure for it to do well. And it's doing well. It was on the charts somehow yesterday. And then, the more support, the better.
That's cool. I will give you a single piece of advice. You might want to, or have somebody look up where somebody can buy Richmond A's FC jerseys, because you're going to get, you know, if you're running all these things, you're going to get a lot of requests. And I'm telling you right now, somebody's going to ask for one. And that's it for us. We'll be back next week. Again, the Islanders have a few days off, so we'll find some time and hopefully we could get some more performances like that third period in Chicago. All right. Thanks for listening. And we will talk to you then. All right. Bye-bye.